The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. It's time to celebrate. The Adam Carolla Show just hit its 10-year anniversary, and Adam is kicking it off in style. Join Adam this week as he welcomes late-night talk legends Jimmy Kimmel on The Adam Carolla Show and Jay Leno on CarCast. Congratulations, Adam. Download The Adam Carolla Show and CarCast every week on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Welcome into the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with Sam Monson. And this will be pretty much your free agent preview, even though a lot has already happened here. Sam, how you doing, man?
Good. How about you, Steve?
Doing great. Good to be back here on a Monday morning. I have to say, I kind of like the way old free agency worked, where just there was no real, like there was tampering, but it was illegal.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of it.
And you just kind of waited for Tuesday. It was always the second Tuesday in March. And once 4 o'clock hit, just it all broke. Just craziness. There's 28 signings on the spot.
Yeah.
And we'd be live blogging at, you know, profootballfocus.com. The site would be exploding. We were a young company, and, you know, the site would crash multiple times. It's the good old days.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting the way that the tampering period was happening, and it created this sort of day or two of rumors and craziness. And then as soon as it actually was legal, as soon as it was unleashed, you just had this flurry of all the agreed signings that had happened.
Now, but you had a few mishaps, like Frank Gore was a fake Eagle one time, and then he went to the Colts a few years ago. But there was a point where there wasn't a ton coming out of the illegal tampering period.
Well, there was always a ton coming out of it. It's just that you didn't really hear about it until, you know, the deals were announced.
Yeah.
So they didn't necessarily break cover, but then suddenly the deadline passed and there were 12 immediate signings.
Yeah, how did that happen?
So, yeah, some things probably happened in the tampering period. Whereas now you get this legal tampering, and it kind of drags it out a little bit. It's not quite the same flurry of intensity.
Yeah, I kind of liked
the
intensity of Tuesday. Anyway, we're gonna be here all week. I think what we're going to do is an extra little bonus podcast for everyone here because free agency is going to take up so much of our time. We'll do free agent preview / review today on Monday. We'll come back Thursday or Friday, kind of review the week with you and I. And Renner and I will do draft podcast in the middle.
Okay.
How's that sound?
Sounds
fine. A little bonus for all of our listeners. So let's get into the big stuff that's already happened, most of which are trades, starting with Antonio Brown finally being traded from the Pittsburgh Steelers to the Oakland Raiders, third round and a fifth round pick involved there. Are you surprised by the compensation and how this all played out? And what are your thoughts on the fit here, Brown to the Raiders?
Not really surprised by the compensation because, I mean, Pittsburgh basically had no leverage at this point, right?
Right.
Your wide receiver has made it patently clear he wants the hell out of Dodge. I mean, at that point, he's 30 years old. He wants to be the richest wide receiver in the game. You don't have a lot to work with if you're the Steelers. You're basically dealing with what can we get out of him, and if we can't get that, we have to sit on him for a year like we did Le'Veon Bell. So it's not a great spot for them. For the Raiders, it doesn't really mesh sync with this whole rebuilding project, this, you know, the 10-year plan, the three first-round picks, which they kept intact, so that's not been derailed or anything. It's just that, you know, it's probably not going to mesh with Antonio Brown's peak years. But
But I don't know. I think I disagree with that a little bit, because a rebuild in today's NFL isn't really a 10-year thing. And I know we've joked, well, you know, Gruden's there for 10 years and all that stuff. But a rebuild in the NFL can really happen in 2 years.
It can.
Especially when you have that much draft capital. If you hit on those picks, which is a big if.
Yes.
But this is the proper way to draft in volume. And if you hit on those picks, you become a contender immediately. And it's not like they have Derek Carr at quarterback, who's at least capable with the supporting cast, you know, to put together a good season.
The rebuild will not happen with Derek Carr at quarterback. The rebuild will only happen, and it will happen quickly if it does happen, if they draft Kyler Murray. If they draft Kyler Murray, they can have the kind of turnaround you're talking about, the way the Browns did with Baker Mayfield. It won't happen with Derek Carr.
Why is that?
Because Derek Carr isn't that good.
He's 2 years removed from an 85 overall PFF grade.
Right.
And we were in looking like he was on the cusp. He was a 78 and then an 85, looking like he's on the cusp of becoming an annual top 10 quarterback.
He's 2 years, an ankle, on one of the best offensive lines in the game away from that. And one of those things isn't happening, isn't going back that way in the space of this offseason.
I mean, what are the odds that even Kyler Murray puts up a 78 to 85 season immediately? I mean, I think he's up there, but I mean,
I think he could.
There's as much risk, I think, with Kyler Murray in the next 3 years as there is Derek
dramatically Carr. Higher. If he is the quarterback that he looks like he is,
I agree with
he
that
will transform
part.
This team in a way Derek Carr doesn't look like he has the capability to do. At this point, Derek Carr is morphing himself into one of these quarterbacks that just doesn't have that ceiling. Even in his good year, which did look like he was heading in the right direction, he was on the conservative end of the spectrum. I mean, he is basically Alex Smith, only with a busted ankle and no offensive line in front of him.
He's not Alex Smith.
I mean, recently,
he's been far more conservative, but
all the time he's been conservative. Even in that good year, he was conservative. He just had a few. It was like Alex Smith's peak Kansas City year, where the efficiency on the deep stuff was
insane.
Yeah,
He's got 2 years that are comparable with Alex Smith's peak year as far as aggressiveness and getting the ball down the field.
But neither of them have been recently now.
Yeah, 15 and 16.
Anyway, I don't think the Antonio Brown thing meshes with the whole rebuilding strategy. I just think that at the shiny thing was dangling in front of John Gruden, and the asking price was too low to turn down. It was like
Mike
a guy.
Mayock.
It was like, well, whatever. No, Gruden has final say on decisions. That's personnel decisions. Even Mayock said that. This was kind of the equivalent of getting to the checkout somewhere, and you know the deal beside you,
Snickers bar,
right? The Snickers bar, $3 for $1. You were like, well, at that price, I can't afford to leave him here.
Except the Snickers bar made you, after you bought it, make it the highest priced Snickers bar in history. That's the issue.
Okay.
Yeah. It looked like a good deal. It looked like a bargain. Third and a fifth. That's a great bargain. But now the Snickers bar is worth $19 million a year.
Yeah. Okay.
That's where we are.
We've kind of ridden this analogy off the rails a little bit.
That's what we do.
But
anyway,
basically, this was a checkout impulse purchase.
Here's the other thing. Antonio Brown, we have a whole video going up on YouTube. We're breaking down the mechanics of some of this stuff. But Antonio Brown and Big Ben, I know we wrote an article about the difference in passer rating with Big Ben versus all the backups that Pittsburgh has. I don't think that really tells the story, because I don't really care how Antonio Brown performed with Charlie Batch and Michael Vick, Landry Jones, and all those guys. But the chemistry that he had with Big Ben on the field, their ability to see things, adjust in the scramble drill, adjust in the middle of routes, I mean, just adjust things that just weren't on the chalkboard. I think that is the bigger issue, is the style that Antonio Brown freelances a little bit as a route runner. Big Ben is probably one of the best freelance quarterbacks of all time. That's the bigger difference to me. I do think if you feed Antonio Brown, Derek Carr can get him the ball. You know, the drop off, you know, any, whether you're Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Big Ben, or Derek Carr, I mean, you can get the ball to a good receiver, unless you're just, you know, like DeShone Kizer. There's a big drop off at the bottom end of the spectrum, but Derek Carr can get him the ball and make use of him.
Can, but will he? This is the thing, right?
Well, yeah.
This is where Derek Carr is becoming like Alex Smith, because the problem with Alex Smith is not that he couldn't throw the deep ball, it's that he didn't, ever. And then the 1 year that he did, everything looked great. Now, you're right. Derek Carr is better than the career backups behind Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh. So the fact that the passer rating drops when targeting Antonio Brown from Ben Roethlisberger at 105 to everybody else at 62 doesn't tell the whole story, but you have to ask where in the middle between those two numbers is Derek Carr? Because while he is better than most of the backups behind Ben Roethlisberger, he's a lot worse than Ben Roethlisberger. So where is he on that spectrum? And I think what you need to do is to start looking at what happened to Amari Cooper, who is a talented number one wide receiver who can get open and make plays. Last year, before he was traded away in Oakland, he had a PFF grade of 64.9. After he was traded away to Dallas, and let's face it, Dallas don't have Joe Montana at quarterback, his PFF grade jumped to 79.9. So that's like a 15-point jump.
Okay.
That's pretty big. I would contend...
Small sample size still.
It is, but we've seen, you know, Amari Cooper get fairly well
hamstrung. We've seen Carr and Cooper be fantastic together.
Briefly. Before Derek Carr went in the shell and became Alex Smith 2.0.
We've seen Cooper and Dak be good together briefly.
Right, but we've also
seen... Same thing.
No, we haven't seen Dak Prescott be the kind of conservative quarterback that Derek Carr has been.
He's just as conservative. He throws the ball down the field less than Derek Carr.
And yet somehow is able to get the best out of a receiver that can get open.
In a short period of time, the same thing that Derek Carr did with Amari Cooper back in 2015.
I would contend that 16. Derek Carr is going to be the kind of quarterback that will hold back Antonio Brown in a way he hasn't been held back while Roethlisberger's been on the field.
Yeah, he's going to be a step down from Roethlisberger, but I think you'll still get a ton of value out of him. Calling Derek Carr Alex Smith, I think, is just really hyperbole.
Alex Smith 2.0.
It's hyperbole. Average depth of target between all Chiefs rate in the entire AFC West dating back to 2006. The lowest average depth of target. Alex Smith 2014, Alex Smith 2015, Alex Smith 2016, Alex Smith 2013, Derek Carr 2018, mm-hmm. Alex Smith 2017, Terrell Pryor 2013, Derek Carr 2016, Matt Cassel 2009, Derek Carr 2015. But Carr has average depths of target that Alex Smith has never seen before.
So what you're
like
saying
nine,
is...
No, there's a huge... It's all Alex Smith.
Essentially, the only quarterback to appear along with Alex Smith's name is Derek Carr.
I'm sorry, this is just the Chiefs and Raiders.
That's fascinating.
This is just the Chiefs and Raiders. And the difference between Alex Smith and Derek Carr is massive. Derek Carr's lowest average depth of target is 8. Alex Smith has 4, 7.5 or below. 5, 7.5 below.
Yeah.
So that's a big difference. The most recent year was last year with Carr, yes. But we also have 2017. He averaged 9 yards down the field on every throw, mm-hmm. which is above average. So I think, look, if you have Derek Carr at quarterback, we've said before, I think he falls into this range where about 15 to 20 guys fall, this mid-tier of quarterback, where if you surround them with playmakers, any given year, they can look like top 10 quarterbacks. I think that's the fair assessment of where Derek Carr is right now, despite the one guy who likes to send like 29 straight tweets at us about defending Derek Carr.
Yeah.
But I think we're all in this boat that's where he is. And if you're going to get the most out of him, you load him up with playmakers, and Antonio Brown is one. And that's where they are, the Raiders. I don't think it's a bad move.
I don't think it's a bad move. Sometimes you want the Snickers bar.
Let's look at it.
It's not going to be Antonio Brown in Oakland. It's not going to be the Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's fair.
That's all I'm saying.
Right. Great. I mean, you don't have to go to hyperbole and call him Alex Smith 2.0. I don't think that's what he is. Last year, was he on the crazy end of the conservative spectrum? Yeah, I don't think that's ultimately where Derek Carr will be year in, year out.
Okay.
How's that sound? Man, check out the video. We got even more analysis on that one, though a lot of crossover. What about the Browns trading for Olivier Vernon? The Giants get Kevin Zeitler, the guard. What are your thoughts on that trade? A couple draft picks involved there as well.
This is outstanding for the Browns. Olivier Vernon is a way better player than almost everybody appears to want to give him credit for.
It's because of the contract. He got overpaid.
Right.
He got overpaid because of a half season, essentially.
People need to stop doing that. Like, just because you gave a guy a rich contract and he doesn't become Aaron Donald, doesn't mean he's not a really good player. Like, Sue was always judged based off the contract he got in Miami, which was absurd.
But he was still very
good. But he was better in Miami than he ever was in Detroit. Like, Sue lived up to everything he could do with that contract. He didn't become Aaron Donald, That's not his fault. That's the Dolphins' fault for paying him way more money than he should have been paid. Olivier Vernon didn't become the next great pass rusher, but he outperformed what he'd ever done before in New York. So stop hating on the guy.
Yeah, we had Myles Garrett with the, I think it was the number 5 PFF pass rush grade or 6th, and Vernon was just behind him.
Right.
A little bit less volume. The difference between the Browns had nobody else. Myles Garrett played over 1,000 snaps last year. Vernon's been that guy that's had to play over 1,000 snaps because they had no depth. So now you've got two guys who can rush the passer. I think the thing I like the most, I don't think the Giants lost the trade necessarily, because I do think Zeitler will certainly upgrade their offensive line, which has been horrendous. But the part that I think makes it better for the Browns is the fact that they have a contingency plan. Austin Corbett, who they drafted last year in the second round, comes in. He steps in at guard. We don't know anything. We don't know what he's going to do, but you know, you at least have this backup plan. The Giants have no edge rushers now. They traded JPP. They traded Olivier Vernon over the last 2 years. They already had one of the worst pass rushes last year. Now they have Lorenzo Carter, who was a third rounder last year, who wasn't that good in college, was okay last year. I mean, they don't have any contingency, but the Browns do.
I mean, I think they lost the trade, not because Zeitler's a bad player, but because what is the plan in New York? What are they trying to achieve?
Oh, I don't know.
It's like steadfast refusal to accept that Eli Manning at some point needs replacing, and therefore, well, let's just slowly rebuild an offensive line around him.
Well,
because
no,
that's the problem.
Because if they're going to draft Dwayne Haskins, say,
right,
then you've added Solder, Will Hernandez, you've added Zeitler. They're going hard on for a right tackle in free agency by all accounts, whether it's a Darrell Williams from the Carolina Panthers. I mean, they are. If they signed a Darrell Williams, say, now they've got a very intriguing offensive line, and you're building around Saquon Barkley. No, I mean, you have to listen. If you are going to go after Dwayne Haskins, a guy that struggles mightily under pressure, you pick up a Darrell Williams offensive line play. It's tough to predict year in, year out, but you at least have this offensive line that could be at least in the middle of the pack to the top end if a few things happen. Will Hernandez improves like we suspect. Solder plays league average like he has for much of his career. Darrell Williams gets back to his previous self, and Zeitler continues his strong play, even though he dropped off last year.
I mean, trading away a good pass rusher for a good guard is not a good move.
I agree with that.
Objective.
In isolation, but you asked what the plan was. I'm telling you what I think the plan is as far as protecting. I'm assuming it's to protect the next quarterback, Dwayne Haskins, not necessarily 50-year-old Eli Manning.
You would hope, though every time his name gets brought up, we all talk about how great Eli still is and how many problems he's had. The protection around him has been poor. So we're going to need to improve that so Eli can get back to his best, because Eli can still get it done, Steve.
Yeah. Look, I would protect my players too. Like when I'm a GM, I will protect my players.
Yeah, there's,
but
there's,
I also feel like I'd also be honest and say, yeah,
right,
Eli's at the end of his rope.
There's a degree to which
has
you
been
can
for 8 years.
Do that without, you know, really building them up to the point where you shouldn't be doing that.
I certainly wouldn't say, well, he threw the ball well in our 3 mini camp days.
Yeah.
Therefore, he's got it.
The Browns, though, Mike Renner made the really excellent point that there's probably no pass rusher that's had a harder job over the past few years than Vernon, because he's been going up against the left tackles in the NFC East twice.
This has been my theory for years when I'm studying left tackle, right tackle.
Tyron Smith,
yeah.
Jason Peters, Trent Williams for
last
Washington.
Last year they didn't.
Right. And he had a career year last year. So, again, that kind of backs up the point. So he's had the hardest job of any pass rusher in the NFL probably over the past few years. Now, with Myles Garrett already there, he's probably going to be switching to the other side, where he'll be going up against the right tackles in the AFC North, which is not even in the same vicinity of difficulty.
Or you just mix it up, switch both guys.
You can do both,
yeah.
Whatever. But whatever happens, it's going to be a hell of a lot easier than the job he's had over the past few years, and potentially in a completely different world of easier.
It includes what he did in Miami, too, because he used to rush off the right side for the most part in Miami, too.
Right.
He was weird because he would not, Vernon here, he would not have great seasons, but he gave Joe Thomas as much trouble as anyone else. He gave Tyron Smith a ton of trouble when he did match up with him at times. So he beat some good left tackles at times throughout his career. Yeah, I mean, when I was studying this left tackle, right tackle value thing throughout the years, people, left tackles don't have it more difficult than right tackles, we have to flip it to the pass rushers and say right ends, rushing from right end is more difficult than rushing from left end because the NFL still puts their best pass protectors at left tackle. That is a factor when just using PFF grade, for instance, and using that context. So, yeah, I like the move for the Browns. I like their contingency.
And also bear in mind, this is a team that had a ton of cap space. So, okay, they're absorbing this contract that we've said before is overinflated. They can well afford to do that. So I think for them, it's a great move. They add a secondary pass rushing threat to Myles Garrett, to a team that's already headed in the right direction. It looks like it can contend in a division because they finally have the quarterback. Browns are making noise.
Let's discuss the New England Patriots trading for Michael Bennett. They trade a fifth round pick, for Michael Bennett and a seventh round pick to the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles, I think, trying to just free up some money because they're at the bottom end of the salary cap scale in the NFL right now. Another really good risk for the Patriots. I mean, the more you study this stuff, the Patriots, somebody broke it down the other day. They've drafted in the fifth round like twice in the last 7 or 8 years. It's just a bunch of trades for players. And, you know, when you think about the hit rate in the fifth to seventh round, taking a chance on a veteran like a Michael Bennett, see what you can get out of him, just seems to make a ton of sense for the Patriots.
And he's a guy you can obviously replace what Trey Flowers does in terms of versatility, line up all over that defensive line, rush him inside and outside. Obviously, he's a hell of a lot cheaper than Trey Flowers, suggesting that he's going to be on his way out. He also feels like the kind of player that it seems like Belichick just, there's certain guys that he wants to coach at some point in his career. And whether it's
Ed Reed, he never got a chance to. Whether
it's like the last season of his career, you just convince him to come over for one last hurrah. He tries to get a shot with those guys. I think Chad Johnson / Ocho Cinco was one of those guys as well. It just feels like Michael Bennett is one of those guys that Belichick's looked at throughout his career and thought, you know what? I'd like to have a crack with that guy once.
It's a potential double whammy for the Patriots, too, because the rumors are that Martellus Bennett, his brother, Michael Bennett's
might
want to come out of retirement. And when you look at what the Patriots have at tight end, Gronk with possible retirement, and even if he comes back, he was a shell of himself last year. Bennett was the guy. Don't forget, the Patriots won the Super Bowl with an injured Gronk. He was out after week 9 or 10 in the 2016 season. Martellus Bennett stepped in. He's not a Gronk replacement by any means, but he's a big-bodied receiver that can do some things, and he's a good run blocker. If they do steal Martellus Bennett out of retirement, it's a double whammy. Think about that. For a fifth-round pick, you're essentially getting the Bennett brothers, see what they can do, mitigate some of the issues at playmaker because the Patriots do need just more more playmakers at tight end and wide receiver. So I think that's just an easy win here.
And you got a free seventh coming back. Always get the seventh.
Load up on sevens. Here's another general draft strategy I want to discuss, okay? Because there was a couple trades that I found interesting in the NFL this week. The Oakland Raiders traded Kelechi Osemele to the New York Jets. So it's Osemele and the sixth-round pick to the Jets for their fifth-round pick. This is one of those just feels like a steal for the Jets, potentially. And then the Arizona Cardinals trade for Marcus Gilbert from the Pittsburgh Steelers for a sixth-round pick. I am all about trading low-round picks for these veteran offensive linemen. I don't care what the contracts are because the cap space, so many teams have so much cap space. I am all for trading low-round picks for somewhat established NFL linemen, especially Osemele. He's been very, very good in the NFL. Last year took a step back. Was that the Raiders? Was that Tom Cable? This is an easy win, I think, for the Jets. And I think it's a win for the Cardinals. As difficult as it is to develop offensive linemen in today's NFL, I think this is the way you go about building an offensive line.
I mean, for the Cardinals in particular, because that offensive line was a disaster last year. It was the worst offensive line in the NFL by a distance. And this was an NFL that included the Houston Texans offensive line.
Right.
So the Cardinals was an absolute wreck. They need a lot of work on that offensive line. So you can't just say, well, we'll fix it in the draft, because you're not going to get five starters in the draft. Now, okay, there's some guys that were injured, and you might get some viable, creep back towards average and a couple of guys coming back.
Yeah.
But they need to attack that every way they can. And to be able to throw a six-round pick at it and get a guy who should be a significant upgrade at right tackle is huge. That's a steal for them. The Jets, they're just taking a shot of a guy who has Pro Bowl play in his on his resume, and see if they can get him anywhere near back to that play. I think it's a good move for both those teams.
That's what I'm saying. So, if, you know, I didn't think what the Vikings did a couple years ago, they paid a lot of money for Riley Reiff and for Mike Remmers. It didn't seem bad on the surface. That was the creep back toward average strategy, right? We've got these two average tackles, but they paid a pretty hefty price for them in free agency. Now, you do have to pay money for Assembly because he's already on his contract and all that stuff, but maybe that's where the Vikings, you know, should go strategically as well. Is just, look, grab these late round picks, all of like the Matt Slossons of the world, all these guys who have, even if they've got one leg and they've got busted knees, a lot of these guys can roll out there and play better than the guys you're going to develop as rookies. So how do you balance that if you're building an offensive line in today's NFL? I am all about trying to grab these veterans. Marcus Gilbert's 31 years old. He's got multiple years, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years out of 8 at 70 plus. Every year of his career has been a 65 plus in PFF terms. I mean, that is average to just above average at right tackle, which is extremely valuable in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, Minnesota's problem is that they just don't appear to be able to hit on any of the players they're actually trying to fix the line with. Like, it's not that they haven't. I don't know that any strategy,
the strategy
they've employed
hasn't been bad. Right.
It's just that their strike rate is almost zero. Like, the only player that appears to have any shot of working out is Brian O'Neill.
Yeah, right, part tackle. Of the strategy is having guys that that do hit here.
So at some point, you're going to need to have a better at-bat rate than that.
No, I agree. But I think overall, as a general strategy, go ahead and trade those late-round picks for veteran offensive linemen. All right, what other Denver Broncos. They trade Case Keenum in a 7th to the Washington Redskins in a 6th. Now, on the surface, you could say, it's Case Keenum. The Redskins are now going from Colt McCoy at quarterback with Alex Smith injured. Colt McCoy to Case Keenum, great upgrade. But this feels like the right move for the Redskins. I mean, Case Keenum for almost nothing is better than nothing. It's not going to, you know, save the franchise or anything like that, but might as well get a guy that's on the bottom end of starting caliber as you're looking for that next guy for the future.
I mean, yeah. So Denver got rid of his contract. So, okay, fine for them. I mean, you can't really say it was a good move because they put themselves in a situation where they needed to get rid of Case Keenum's monster contract for almost nothing. So it was a good move on the back of a bad move for Denver, right? For Washington, they, for almost nothing, both in picks and money terms, because Denver's picking up most of the tap, they get a quarterback that is certainly a decent backup and could potentially, in a pinch, be a better starter than Colt McCoy. For them, though, I think you're in the same situation as Denver in terms of hoping it doesn't change your draft strategy. Like, the worst thing you could do for both the Broncos and the Redskins at this point is say, well, that's the quarterback situation fixed.
Oh, no. Yeah,
on
exactly.
We go.
Exactly.
You have to hope they're still looking for a number one quarterback in the draft. And Washington, I think you need to hope the same thing. Now, for them, the interesting thing is, are they getting Case Keenum to flip for Josh Rosen for the Cardinals if the Cardinals love Kyler Murray? Because Case Keenum has that Kingsbury connection.
Does so Keenum. Oh, I like that. So Keenum.
So maybe
Kyler.
Maybe Keenum is becoming Kyler's backup in Arizona under Kingsbury. That's a nice little synergy there. Washington trade number 15 to get Josh Rosen. Now they have Rosen with Colt McCoy backing him up.
I think Rosen for the number 15 pick is a win-win.
Yeah.
For both teams. I think that is a very good win-win for both. That'd be the Rosen to the Washington Redskins for the number 15 pick. I think if you're the Redskins.
And Keenum,
maybe. I mean, if you're the Redskins, there's no other. I think that there's two quarterbacks you might want to take a shot on this draft. That's Kyler Murray, Dwayne Haskins, at least in the first round. I mean, I think Rosen would be the second or third best quarterback in this group. He's right up there with Haskins. I think that would be a good move. Give Rosen.
There's
a
lot of dominoes that can fall if this whole Arizona loves Kyler Murray thing is legit.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense if that's actually true. If the reports are true that Arizona was kind of shopping Rosen at the combine, was feeling out what that looked like, this makes a lot of sense. Washington gets themselves a quarterback that could potentially be of a lot of interest to the Cardinals in terms of a backup, and they could throw that number 15 pick to get Rosen. That would be the answer to their quarterback problem.
So much of our analysis is assuming that the team is also going to make another smart move. So assuming that the Giants are still looking for a quarterback, assuming that the Broncos are still looking for a quarterback, and assuming that the Redskins are still looking for a quarterback.
If they're not, all of these moves are terrible.
Yeah. If the moves are like, hey, we're going to roll with Eli, Flacco, and Keenum, respectively.
You all suck.
Then that's rough. But assuming that they're still looking for their next guy, I don't mind any of these moves. They're fine. I'm interested in Case Keenum and Colt McCoy being on the same team. Because I think I was talking with Zach about this last year. Like, if you gave Colt McCoy the same opportunities that you get that Case Keenum got a couple years to start with the Rams, and then he just runs into the right situation with the Vikings.
Yeah,
I think it was you that
asked what's the difference between Colt McCoy and Case Keenum.
I've always been a bit of a Colt McCoy apologist. I don't think he has as much arm as Keenum, and it's limited. You know, he's limited. But I still think if you put Colt McCoy in the Case Keenum
To which my answer was the 2017 season.
What about?
I mean, they're maybe the same guy, except Keenum had that year. Colt McCoy's never had it. We just assume that maybe he can in the right situation.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you gave him that situation in Minnesota, I don't know if he'd be a top 10 quarterback.
That was the answer to your question. What's the difference between the two, the 2017 season?
Pretty much nothing except one year.
Keenum at least has shown that in the right circumstances, he can do that. Colt McCoy hasn't.
All right, let's fly through some of the other stuff. Today reported the Detroit Lions are going to sign Danny Amendola for a one-year deal. There were rumors that Amendola was going, there was mutual interest between Amendola and the Patriots going back there. Amendola is going to get paid about the same as he was paid in Miami. There's a bit of a reunion here with the Detroit front office. And I do I like this for Matthew Stafford, because when he did lose his slot receiver, Golden Tate, his numbers tanked. Amendola's not as good all around, I don't think, as Tate, but you know, it's a good way to just add another slot playmaker there.
Yeah, Amendola can still do a job for a team. Obviously, when he's healthy, which for Amendola is always a concern.
Right.
But it's a decent move, right? You can sign a guy you know can still get it done. It's a risk. It's only 1 year. But, yeah, good move for both sides.
Kansas City Chiefs sign Carlos Hyde, who was released by the Jacksonville Jaguars. 1 year deal.
The second part of that is my favorite part of that. This is the difference between great franchises and franchises that aren't so great. The Patriots are taking their fifth round picks and they're flipping them. They're getting a seventh back, like a free pick, and they're getting a guy like Michael Bennett, potentially getting his brother as well. It's all kinds of chess being played there. The Jaguars,
and by the way, a lot of their picks, a lot of times that they trade for players, they let them walk in free agency get a comp pick, which is actually higher.
Good.
Sorry.
So they're all kinds of chess being played with their fifth round picks. The Jags are taking their fifth round pick and essentially setting it on fire by trading it for a running back last year, not playing him, and then releasing him in the offseason. Like, that is, in a nutshell, the difference between good franchises and bad franchises.
It's not great.
Is understanding the value of these lower round picks and what to do with them, and more to the point, what not to do with them.
Like, so, don't trade him for Carlos Hyde.
Don't trade him for a running back ever. And if you're going to trade him for a running back, don't release him the next offseason, knowing that you still need running back help, and let someone else pick him up for nothing. It's just, I mean, that they couldn't have done anything worse with a fifth-round pick than what the Jags did with that. And for the Chiefs, they get a guy who could actually be a valuable part of that offense, given how idiot-proof that offense now is for running backs. So it's a nice move for them.
Dallas Cowboys restructuring Sean Lee's deal at linebacker.
Right.
Surprised?
No, because Sean Lee is their defensive coordinator in waiting.
Just based off of what you saw in the reality show?
No, based off in part that.
You're just going to keep him in the building?
Yeah.
Man, he could have value for another team.
It's not like they haven't already done that.
But he's not going to see the field with Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith.
I mean, he'd see the field, just not a lot.
Yeah, but he would be starting for a number of other teams.
Yes. But only for two games before he broke something.
Well, that's true.
So they're going to keep him in the building. He'll play a couple of hundred snaps, probably break something. He'll have the entire time to be able to coach Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch. And then, like, next year, you can just make him, you know,
the Sean Lee
linebackers coach.
Kellen Moore.
2 years' time, he'll be DC.
Sean Lee and Kellen Moore.
Yeah, 2 years' time, we're going to have a whole coaching staff comprised out of guys that they used to be playing a couple of seasons before.
Tony Romo, head coach.
Yeah.
Romo's going to come.
Witten will still be playing because otherwise, you know, they might.
There's news. Jason Witten back to playing.
Yeah.
Not
but he has anymore. He has to stay on the roster because otherwise there's a chance he might wind up back on camera.
Ouch. Los Angeles Chargers released Jahlil Adai, re-signed Denzel Perryman. With Adai, we've always thought that they could upgrade at the free safety spot. You know, I think that's I will keep mocking Nasir Adderley, the free safety to them in the late first round.
Oh, a draft mocking, rather.
Draft mock. Yeah. I will not mock them. I will keep mock drafting.
I thought that was a bit
free
harsh.
Safeties. Yeah, because I did it with Malik Hooker a couple
FCS
years
ago. FCS guy, we're just going to start mocking him?
I would not mock Nasir. He's pretty fun to watch.
The cult.
Resigning Denzel Perryman, pretty decent run-stopping linebacker. Miami Dolphins signed former New England Patriots tight end Dwayne Allen. Allen has been essentially just a blocking tight end over the last couple of years. And actually, because he had that one really good rookie season.
Yeah.
Where he outperformed Kobe Fleener.
Where we thought he'd be amazing.
The Colts. Yeah, he looked great. He could run block. He could catch the ball. I was just shocked at how awkward he looked, just running routes, trying to catch footballs.
He was never the same guy after getting that bad injury after that year.
Yeah. But he could run block. He made some, for whatever that's worth, not much, but he could run block a little bit. So he's just a piece, a tight end two, tight end three type of guy.
Yeah.
I think that's it for big. No, Dante Fowler re-signing with the Los Angeles Rams. Oh, we got Weddle. Eric Weddle goes to the Los Angeles Rams. So LaMarcus Joyner hits free agency. Eric Weddle could still play.
Yeah.
He can still play free safety. He still moves around, does a lot of fun stuff. Wade Phillips has a little, piece to work with there.
Yeah, I mean, the Rams, they're not done. They're going to continue to sort of take one-year shots at this thing. But as long as Jared Goff is on a rookie deal, they're going to have the tools to throw some money at these one-year problems.
Well, plus Zach's there. You have to just factor in how much Goff's going to improve.
Obviously.
With Zach.
You see the Rams posted a little video getting to know new assistant QB coach Zach Robinson. It's a good thing. He had all this, on-camera preparation.
Oh, he would have been a mess if we didn't prep him for it. I want to know what happened at the beginning. Were they like, Zach, so you're going to start looking down, and then you're just going to look up slowly.
Eyes up at the camera.
Now, did he look up at a normal rate, and then they slowed down the video, or did they say, do the dramatic?
Yeah, I don't know.
Look up to the camera. He looked good. I mean, look, I know Zach. It may have taken a couple takes to get the thing there.
I mean,
but the final take is good. That's all that matters with Zach. The final take is always on point and legit.
It's a good thing he had all that on-camera exposure.
Plus, now he can... I can't make the password joke.
No, Weddle, probably right? not. I mean, but, yeah.
Just made it. He can make sure Eric has full access to his PFF account.
I just get DMs. Eric Weddle would forget his password to PFF quite a lot.
Because a lot of players have PFF accounts.
Yeah.
Weddle's one of them.
Mm-hmm. Could never remember his password.
Struggled with the password.
Including after we reset it to his second name.
You can't give away a guy's password.
Well, it's not that now. I'm just saying at one point it used to be his surname to try and avoid forgetting it. He still couldn't remember it.
This might need to get cut out of the podcast.
Plus, even if we gave away his password, you need to know what his account name was.
But he's really smart on the field.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Right.
I mean, he does
it's
as
like
much
he dedicates
as
all of his runtime to football stuff. There's no room in my brain for like passwords and stuff. None.
Maybe it's all just my his subconscious time. Way of saying, I don't need to know my grades and evaluations and all that stuff. I know
possibly
how good I am, even though they generally ended up pretty good. Dante Fowler signed to a one-year deal. Interesting, because he's just finishing his rookie contract, and Fowler is in this, he's in this show-me type of part of his career. Didn't really live up to the hype of a first-round pick. He was okay down the stretch. He had the key pressure that led to the Drew Brees interception in overtime of the NFC Championship game. But outside of that, just kind of hit or miss a few games here and there. I like the idea of a one-year deal for Fowler just to see if he can figure it out, as long as you're not putting too much investment there.
Yeah, I think...
given the rest of their edge defender situation.
Yeah, I think the one-year deal, again, is fair for both sides. It's possibly a little rich given what he's shown so far. But again, the Rams have the money to play with because of that Jared Goff contract. It's worth taking a shot on.
All right, we good? Is that everything?
Yeah.
Awesome. So there is no better time to go get PFF Elite.
No, this is the time. This is the time. Free agency week.
Your team's going to sign someone. You're going to want to know, how good is this guy?
Yeah.
We'll give you like a tweet of information. PFF, we'll tweet out the information. We'll give you like a little blurb at profootballfocus.com. We'll give you a video on the YouTube channel. But if you want the full breakdown, it's part of PFF Elite, Premium Stats 2.0. Every single snap of this guy's career dating back to 2006, you see the stats, the grades, and see how good they are.
The great thing is we're getting to the point now where that's almost every player now. The longer we go on through this, the fewer people whose career we don't have.
Yeah.
So a couple more years, once you know Tom Brady sits his ass on the couch,
10 years,
we'll be able to say we've got every snap of every player's career.
Yeah.
There are no more old guys in the league who were playing back before PFF existed.
Who's like Brady, Breeze,
all those 04 QBs as well. We're gonna get those guys out as well. But once they're all gone, we're good.
Yeah, so it's great. So you get most guys' full career, especially the guys hitting free agency for the first time, over at ProFootballFocus.com. That's PFF Elite. And don't forget, the draft guide came out. If you have Edge or Elite, the draft guide last week, version 1, will have another update.
580-something profiles.
Yeah, over 600 pages of goodies. About 2,000 players have at least like a stat
right
in there from the draft class.
And as you said,
fantastic.
More stuff to come.
That's right.
Big board in version 2. We'll have some heat map, target map stuff for quarterbacks in version 2. We'll have the Senior Bowl data in version 2. All kinds of new stuff.
Can I use the promo code on here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you remember what it is?
NFL 2019.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so NFL 2019 gets you 25% off either Edge or Elite. All right, so if you guys made it to the end of the podcast here and you haven't subscribed, you get your 25% off. NFL 2019 is the promo code. That's 25% off of Elite or Edge. And it's 365 days of access, Sam. So you get it for the entire year, and you get in, you get the QB annual, you get the draft guide, premium stats if you have Elite, and our best fantasy tools.
Yeah.
So go do that. NFL 2019, that's the promo code. Go check it out. We're going to give you guys a bonus podcast this week. We'll do a draft one in the middle. You and I will be back later in the week. Maybe, I think Friday would be a good recap day, right?
Probably.
Free agency recap. We'll try to do the draft one maybe midweek on Wednesday. Sound good?
Yep.
All right, man. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys for our bonus pod on Wednesday. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week 1. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.